I'm a huge planner, so whenever my wife, Radhi, and I would go on our adventures, I'd meticulously plan out our itineraries and book our accommodations in advance. It's like a yearly tradition that we do. And let me tell you, Booking.com has been my go-to every step of the way. Whether I want to be a simple guy nestled in the countryside or be the stylish and modern guy in the heart of the city, Booking.com never fails to offer a wide range of options that perfectly suit your preferences. And they have everything you need to turn your travel dreams into reality, offering accommodations here in the US. Plus, the ease of booking through the app makes the whole process a breeze. So trust me when I say, when it comes to planning unforgettable getaways, Booking.com is where it's at. Ready to book your next adventure? Book whoever you want to be on Booking.com. Booking.yeah. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually in person and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual. $90,000. That's approximately how much time an individual will dedicate to work in their lifetime. That's why it's more important than ever to partner with UKG, a company fully dedicated to helping you create a great place to work. With HR, pay, time, and culture solutions, UKG is the only partner that delivers the tools and insights your employees need, no matter who they are, where they work, or what they do. See what UKG can do for your business and your people at ukg.com/great. UKG, our purpose is people.
Guess what? If you fight for Black lives, you also get more free. So this isn't just about Black people. Yes, we are asking you to put your attention on Black people, but recognize that our liberation is bound into one another. And so when Black people get free, we all get free. And that is, I think, the sort of foundation of Black Lives Matter.
Hey everyone, welcome back to On Purpose, the number one health podcast in the world, where we focus into all of the areas and themes that affect our mental, emotional, and physical health. And this includes everything that's happening in the world around us. Now, you know that I focus in on trying to speak to guests where we can all learn together as a community, as a family, as part of the On Purpose audience. And I'm so excited because today I get to sit down with an individual. Not someone that I'm just curious and interested about, but someone that I believe that I have a lot to learn from and that I think we'll all get the benefit of from hearing deep answers to these questions that I know you've sent me and questions that I have myself. Now, I want you to be able to expand your mind today. I want us to train ourselves today to listen without judgment, allow us to stretch our minds without comparison or judgment, and be able to listen to truly understand. Today's guest is none other than Patrice Cullors. She's an LA native and artist, co-founder of Black Lives Matter and Reform LA Jails. Cullors worked for Black Lives Matter recently, received recognition in Time Magazine's 2020 100 Women of the Year project. She's a best-selling author and a faculty director at Arizona's Prescott College of New Social and Environmental Arts Practice, MFA program that she has developed. In 2019, she joined Freeform's Good Trouble Season 2 and 3 as staff writer and actor. For the last 20 years, she's been one of the front lines of criminal justice reform. Today, we're here to learn more about her, her purpose, and how we can all improve the world we live in together. Patrice, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fascinating today to dive into. I actually mentioned to a few of my friends who are doing some incredible work in this space that I was interviewing today, and they were excited for me, and they were like, you're so fortunate and lucky, so I want you to know that that's how I feel right now as well. And really grateful to you and your team for taking out the time. I wanted to start off by getting our community to understand more about you, you as a person, you as an artist, you and your background, because I think that often that's so missed in conversations and media pieces that are 5 minutes and quick interviews. And you have this rich history and background of your own. And I wanted to start off with this question because you earned an MFA from USC. I wanted you to tell us about how you keep your artist and creative side alive through what you do today.
Thank you for asking about that. I think a lot of people see my activism and sort of relegate it to the world of politics. But I actually argue that my art and my activism are extensions of my political values. And so my art has been something that I have practiced since I was a young girl. I was an artist before I became politicized. And a few years ago, a mentor of mine, Suzanne Lacey, actually brought me to art school. And she said, hey, I'm at USC. I think you'll really value getting an MFA. And I was like, no, I did the BA thing. Wasn't even that excited about that. Like, I really loved being a community organizer and an artist. And she said, no, really, like, spend 2 years on your art. And I begrudgingly applied, but with curiosity. I mean, obviously, I consented to applying. And I got in, and I didn't tell anybody in my family for probably a month, because I wanted to try it out. And if I didn't like it, I would leave. But the minute I entered my studio, so all the artists who got into the program get their own studio, I just started crying. And I was like, oh, I need this. I need my practice in this way. And so I got to spend 2 years in an expensive fellowship, really, you know, holding down my art practice, and it changed me. And I left the program really being reminded that art is at the center of all of what I do, and art is how I both heal, but also art is how I intervene in cultures of violence.
Mm. Yeah, I think art has such an important role to play. Art was my favorite subject growing up, and when I decided not to pursue it beyond the age of 18 in an academic sense, my teachers were really let down by me because I was such a sellout that I gave up. But I feel like my work today, that the artist never leaves you, like that feeling never leaves you, and it always finds a way to come back. And I wanted to ask you about that because your past influence has affected your creation of your first solo show, which was Respite, Reprieve, and Healing. Tell us about what you were processing through that piece and what of your past was kind of coming out.
Sure. Oh, yeah, you really know this. deep dived.
The podcast is called On Purpose because I'm so deeply into just trying to understand humans. And I think you're such a fascinating human. And I think seeing you as through just one lens and one layer is kind of the mistake I think we make today as a society. We try and put people into boxes and we put people into bubbles, and we're like, that's all you are. You can't be anything else. Right. And so anyway, I'm trying my best. So thank you for encouraging me.
I love that. I have a lot of gratitude. I talk to a lot of people, and a lot of people interview me, and they're not interested in the multifaceted Patrice. So I'm like deeply appreciative of this moment. Sure, my solo show for my thesis project was Respite, Reprieve, and Healing, An Evening of Cleansing. And my good friend and creative collaborator, Damon Turner, helped curate this piece. And when I was developing it, I was trying to think about, like, I'm often thinking about the senses when I'm making work. So I'm a performance artist, and I do a lot of public art with my performance. So I was thinking about, like, what did I want people to feel like while they were witnessing it? What did I want them to see? What did I want them to smell? What did I want them to hear? And this is important for me because I feel like for a long time, especially from like 2013 to 2016, a lot of my art was very, I was processing my trauma around, my work being so deeply seeped in Black death. And so much of my work was like a reprocessing of that trauma. And it was a really painful experience in my work and my practice. And so going through this art program, I got to really like deepen into that trauma, but also I think on the other side of it, I recognized that I've survived. And so there's deep resilience there. And so I wanted my piece to look at resilience and look at the impact this movement and Black death has had on my body, but also how I've actually been and how Black women at large are deeply resilient. And so I spent the first part of the piece in an 100-year-old bathtub of salt, of Epsom salt. And while that was happening, there were 14 performers in white robes getting their hair washed in salt and honey. And it was all Black performers. And at the end of that piece, they tied their hair up with a rope. And there was this one individual who was sort of like the sorcerer tying folks' hair up with a rope. And it was in a backyard of this home in South Central. And it was really beautiful because I wanted to, there's the imagery of rope and Black people is a very disturbing imagery traditionally and historically, but this was not that. This was like these, you know, 14 Black folks coming together around their hair and then bounding themselves up and with their heads like together as a unit, as a collective, and not because they were dying, but because they were alive. And so that felt really important to me. But while all this is happening, I had recorded audio of sort of me just thinking about things and like processing out loud. And then there was also a really beautiful team of musicians who were playing. And my good friend Damon Davis, we used his song Light Years to sort of be the score for the piece. So as you can tell, lots of things were happening all at once because that's how I process. It's how I do things. And by the time that kind of first piece of the artist washing hair was done, I was pulling myself up out of the bathtub of salt. It was 400 pounds of salt, so super, super heavy. And I had this gorgeous dress made by my designers at Cotula, who make West African garb. And so I pulled myself up, and there's just sort of this beautiful dress I had on. My hair was done by an artist named Nena Soulfly, and it was these long kind of Medusa braids. And as I pulled myself out of the bathtub, I crawled to a trough of coconut milk, and then plunged myself in that milk and washed myself. And so this was like a really cleansing moment. And there was probably about 300 people at the piece. It was in a backyard. So at every moment, like folks were sort of being moved along. I really like processions. I think like having people move with you in a piece and be a part of that piece is really important in my work. And then I requested everybody come and wear white. And so by the end of the piece, I sort of walked over to where originally people were getting their hair washed and took the dress off and looked at the audience and just like held space while the music was still playing, the live music, and then walked off, and that was the piece. Right. I don't think I've described that piece out loud in that way. So that was actually really helpful for me. I was like, how do I make this visual? It's so many things happening at once.
I'm so glad you did that. Like, that is such a beautiful description. And I mean, I was with you the whole way, and it made me think that how amazing would it be if art was used in media more? Because that visual that you've just painted for me, and like you were saying, the redefining of how the rope is perceived.
Yes.
It's so incredible to think that actually through that art, you're just rewiring the narratives for people in their minds, which you can't do if you're not seeing it through art. It's so hard to do it literally sometimes.
That's actually right.
But the metaphors and everything. So, but I wish I was there live now. So you're going to have to figure out how to do this again. But it sounds so cleansing. Literally, like when I was hearing it, I just felt so like, you know, there was so much cleansing. I'm sure the people that were there were just completely transformed and impacted by it. So thank you for describing that so beautifully. Usually it's hard to describe things in words, but moving on from that, tell me if someone showed you a glimpse of the work you do today, who you are today, if someone showed you that glimpse at 10 years old, Like when you were 10, is that what you saw for yourself? Or when you were 10 or whatever age you want to pick, what was your aspiration? Like, what were your goals? What were your values? What were you seeing was your future growing up in Van Nuys and, you know, locally to where you are now, not far away from where we both live? Like, where did you see your future?
It's a good question. You know, I just finished recording the adapted version of my book into a YA. Mm-hmm. And part of adapting it, we decided that we were going to take my journals from when I was a teenager and sort of go through them and put them in different parts of the book. And I was pretty much the same.
I love that.
Pretty much the same. Like, there was a journal entry where I was like, police do not transform or heal our communities, like when I was 16 years old. And so, like, I was already planting the seeds for my adult self. And I think if someone were to say, hey, this is what you, like, hey, 10-year-old or 12 or 15 or 16-year-old, this is what you're going to be doing, I probably would respond, thank God. Like, that's what I dreamed of. Like, that's what I imagined. I spent a lot of time as an adolescent, like, dreaming of being able to change and help my community, not just like my family, my immediate family, but like wanting to make big changes. And I was, you know, I idolized people like Audre Lorde and Angela Davis and Huey P. Newton and so many of the Black power figures. I really believed that I was, you know, my dad used to always tell me I was born in the wrong generation. Like, you missed it. There was a whole time when people did that you want to do, but that's not going to happen again. So I think I would be like relieved, like, okay, good. Like, I did the things that I wanted to happen. Like, that feels resonant. And I just like chuckled as I read my old journals. I was like, oh my goodness, Patrice, you were so intense. Like, as a kid, like, so glad that I found this work in this world. And also like that I found art so early, because I was already such an intense child that needed like a kind of container to help me with all the big feelings I had. I had very big feelings. I noticed things. I was like very empathetic. And so art, and I think also activism and organizing, really helped contain all of the big feelings I had about what was happening in the world.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/onpurpose to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/onpurpose. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Summer. The best time of the year usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices, and vacation disappears quicker than ice cream melts. But what if summer doesn't have to come with a scorching price tag? What if there's another way? With IKEA, your plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Dreamy getaways can mean the perfect reading nook right outside your window, picnic in the shade, or take your morning coffee to meet the morning sun. After all, we all agree that food just tastes better when you're outside, right? Create that summer escape for family and friends and start planning a better, more affordable summer right now. This summer, make your doorstep the perfect vacation destination with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Yeah, what I love about what you just said is like when you think of art, you think of it as like very flowing and unorganized. Mm-hmm. And then you said, but activism that needs to be organized. And I kind of love those two going together because it's almost like the heart and head kind of getting into synergy.
Absolutely.
And the art allows you to be fully expressive. But then in activism, we can be more explaining and, you know, really helping people understand. So I love the way you brought those two things together. I wonder whether, you know, you're obviously a professor and you're teaching social justice. And I guess, how do you think that's changed from when you were learning and reflecting about that when you were younger, as we just talked about, and how are you seeing people being educated on it today? Do you think there have been positive changes in that education space, seeing as you've stepped in as well yourself? Was there a gap that you saw that you felt like, no, this needs to be addressed differently?
Yes. So the program I teach is actually a master's in fine arts program that is both a combination of social justice and art.
I see.
So that's the gap. I mean, my program isn't like the first of its, like the first program to do this. So I want to be really clear. There's lots of programs who have done this. But what I tried to do in creating this program is think about all the things that I didn't get when I was in art school. And so, you know, my program was amazing and I had a really positive experience, especially because my cohort was incredible. And from my cohort, you know, three of us, Alexander Doris and Noe Olivas and I all started an art gallery and studio in Inglewood. So like we kind of extended our experience and we're like, we're not done playing together. Like, let's go build this other thing. And through that, recognize that the world of academics in the art space and social justice space is often deeply lacking empathy. And so our program is an online program for mostly working artists who just didn't get their degree and like need to go through a program. And so we spend a lot of time on like the artist's practice and building up the empathy around their practice. I feel like the training of artists is pretty sterilized. Like I'm so glad you didn't go to art school. That would have been a terrible, tragic experience, because what usually happens in art school is they actually train you out of being an artist. Right. And they really train you into being a vehicle of capitalism and a commodity. And so while I don't have a problem necessarily with making your art a commodity, some artists are really successful, I think that should not be the only way you have to express your art. And so our program is really building out the empathy. And so we have a lot of healers who are also artists in our program. So we have a course that's specifically art as healing. And I think it's super powerful, the work that we're trying to do. We have courses that are deeply rooted in environmental activism around art. And my work is to often intervene into what I think is a space that isn't giving the full breadth of what could be given, and then also create a new vehicle. Because we can intervene all day, but if we're not creating the new vehicles or where people can change, then people just end up like, you know, shouting and not really changing. So that this program, the MFA program, is really, it's an experiment. We're experimenting. And what I love about the program and my students is that we have a cohort that's mostly students of color, which is also deeply rare in art programs. And it's, our faculty is reflective of that. It's a mostly all people of color faculty. So I feel very grateful for this program and what it's providing, not just my students, but me, and also the academic and art world.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's all pretend to be your students right now, or everyone who's listening. And I want to ask you from that perspective. Let's say someone's listening and they're like, Patrice, Jay, you know, I get it. Like, art is healing. It helps me express. But hey, I'm not really artistic. Like, I don't even know how to draw. Like, or you know, the hangups that people have, or we forget our childlike self and we lose right. that ability to. So if someone's like, Patrice, I want to get in touch with my inner artist again. I want to be able to express myself through art or journaling. Where's a good place for someone to start? If they're just like, I need to just understand my emotions and feelings more, like you were when you were a young person and seeing all of this happening. And I want to express myself through art, not to make a brand out of it or put it on Instagram, but just, you know, just for myself. Where's a good place for someone to start?
I love that question. I think the first place to start is to feel your sensations, feel what's in your body, your hands, your feet, your legs, your stomach, your chest, your shoulders. Like, part of growing up, I think, in places like the West is it divorces you from your feelings. It divorces you from your emotions. And so much of the place of art comes from what you feel. It's an expression of what you feel. It's an extension of what you feel. And so I would, and to remind people who are listening is, numbness is also a feeling. We may not know that, we may not recognize that, but being numb is supporting something that needs to be supported in you. And so people who've dealt with a lot of trauma, we often go numb because the experiences, if we allowed ourselves to feel everything we felt, we'd probably be crushed, literally. So numbing is actually a feeling too. And so check out the places where you feel numb. I'm a big fan of meditation. I'm a big fan of a practice called somatics, which part of it is they have centering practice where you just like take your time, whether you're sitting down or standing up, and breathe into your stomach and slowly allow yourself to feel all of the feelings that you feel. And sometimes they're too big and too much, and you don't have to feel them that big. You can feel them at 10% or 20%. And from there, you know, although I do write a lot, I like to record my voice a lot. So record a note in your phone or, you know, whatever, you know, on your computer, and just like take the time to say out loud what you're feeling and where you're feeling it. And I promise you, if you do that for like 30 days, like even if it's a couple times a week, you'll start to notice patterns, you know? So I feel all my feelings in my throat, my chest, and my stomach, literally. Happiness, sadness, fear, that's like the place where I feel it. And it really helps to notice that, because then I can be like, okay, right now I'm feeling these feelings, like happiness. Oh, okay, great. Like, I can express it in this way, or I'm feeling sadness. I can express it in this way. And that to me is like a really good locator of how to show up for yourself first, and then show up for the other things that you love to do, like art.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual. Ah, summer. The best time of the year usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices, and vacation disappears quicker than ice cream melts. But what if summer doesn't have to come with a scorching price tag? What if there's another way? With IKEA, your plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access. No reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Dreamy getaways can mean the perfect reading nook right outside your window, picnic in the shade, or take your morning coffee to meet the morning sun.
After all, we all agree that food just tastes better when you're outside, right? Create that summer escape for family and friends and start planning a better, more affordable summer right now. This summer, make your doorstep the perfect vacation destination with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget. Herbs hold a special place in my wellness journey, a tradition deeply rooted in my Indian heritage. Introduced to me by my mom, their healing properties have been part of my life since I was born. Growing up, I witnessed firsthand the remarkable effects of herbs on both physical and mental well-being. Among the herbs I take are ashwagandha for its adaptogenic properties, slippery elm bark for gastrointestinal health. Our sponsor, Nature's Way, has these herbs and hundreds more that help support everything from healthy digestion to sleep to stress. They have over 50 years of experience with sourcing herbs from all over the world in the climates where they grow best. Every batch of herbs is rigorously tested for potency and purity in their state-of-the-art lab. Nature's Way believes nature is the ultimate problem solver and is dedicated to bringing the power of plants to help people live healthier lives. To learn more, visit naturesway.com/herbs and use code J10 at checkout for our 10% off any herbal supplements. Terms and conditions apply, valid through June 30th.
What a rich answer. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's going to be so useful to so many people listening, because like you haven't given anyone a format. Like, it's not like painting a picture. You don't have to have a skill to be able to do that. You just need to be still, almost, to just listen and hear. And actually, that's really so much at the heart of the message that I'm hearing right now for the world, is the ability to just be still and listen and hear and observe, both in ourselves and in others, because it feels like that's the ability that's been lost in me included, and in so many of us, the ability to just be still and actually just hear, listen, understand, observe, and not like judge and make a conclusion and you know, draw up a plan. And it's I think it's so fascinating to see how much, so much of that mindset comes from being an artist in some sense.
Yes.
And allowing ourselves to be that.
But my brother, his experience with law enforcement, and honestly, like my entire neighborhood's experience with law enforcement, deeply impacted my worldview. And I think when you grow up as a child and sort of like the people who are in government, like in theory, they're supposed to be the people that protect you, take care of you, but they're doing the opposite. Like they are not only are they neglecting, but they're intentionally abusing your loved ones, your family, and everyone around you. I think that really shaped my worldview around, like, okay, well, if these people who are being paid are not only not protecting me, but they're abusing and neglecting me, then who do we go to? Like, who is supporting us? Who's taking care of us? So with my brother's situation, you know, he was 19 when he was brutally beaten by the sheriff's department. And that experience, it's interesting, because I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but you know, children have like a different understanding of time and like memory. So when my brother experienced his beating by the sheriffs in the county jails, I didn't necessarily know that that's what happened. I just knew it in my spirit. Like something, I knew that he was taken away. I knew something really bad had happened. And my mother hadn't shared it with us. She didn't share it with her children. The only person that ever knew what happened with my brother until we all found out was my grandmother, her mother. But it would take almost a decade until I knew the details of what happened to him. And I realized it a decade later when I came across the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union of Southern California, their complaint against the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. And that complaint basically was 70 sworn testimony of prisoners inside of the county jail that shared their story of essentially not just being abused, but tortured by the sheriff's department. Things like people's front teeth being knocked out, their skulls being shattered, being carved into their bodies, like words. And what I realized while I was reading that, while it was deeply disturbing to read, I was like, oh, this is what happened to my brother. No one ever told me those words, but I knew it. I was like, this is what happened to him. And so he had just been released from prison. And when I read that complaint, and I called him and my mom, and I said, finally, the sheriffs are being sued. And they said, my brother said to me, at least someone will get justice. And it was like, that was like the moment where I was like, oh, okay. Like that did happen to him. And so we went through a whole process and I actually created an entire performance piece around that 86-page complaint. And that piece is what then was the inspiration for my local organization called Dignity and Power Now, which has successfully created civilian oversight of that sheriff's department and has been a huge watchdog around the abuse of that department, and also successfully stopped two $3.5 billion jails that were going to be built in Los Angeles County. So my brother's story and the impact it had on me and my family definitely transformed how, not only how I understood the state's relationship to Black people in particular, but also my role in fighting it back and being like, you messed with the wrong family. You don't get to do that and not be held accountable. And even though it took me a decade plus to receive that kind of accountability, I still fought and fought and fought, and I stayed present for that fight. And I didn't do it alone. Hundreds, and I would argue now thousands of people joined us in holding the sheriff's department accountable and continues to.
Thank you for sharing that. What gave you the courage to, you mentioned it many times, like to fight, and you continue to be present in that fight. Like, what even gave you the belief? Because I feel like for a lot of people right now who may want to see change, or they agree that things need to change, but then they get discouraged at the first hurdle. They get discouraged at the first change, you know? And obviously you've been fighting for this for a long time, and you're not stopping, and you're finding new ways, and you've turned art into activism in a powerful way. Like, what has constantly given you the belief and the courage? Because for most of us, and you made this point earlier too, sorry, I know I'm connecting dots of what you said, but you know, for so many of us, it's like we just care about our family, just about, and then kind of we'll see what happens with the rest of the world. And you know, you said at an early stage, you realized it wasn't just about your family, it was about the community. And then of course, with your brother having this experience, and then you're like, okay, well, how does this stretch beyond just him and now beyond to the world? What is it that gives you the belief and courage, A, to extend yourself that something will change, and B, that you want to care for more than just the people right around you, just your community? Because that's where it started with this group you're saying, but now it's extended.
I think love, a deep and profound love for my family and my community. My brother was my first best friend, literally. We would sit in our room when I was a kid. I remember I talked a lot as a child. I still talk a lot, but I was a very like precocious, like I talked a lot, very curious. My mom says that I would sit in the car seat when I was first learning how to read, and she'd be driving and I would tap my brother and ask him, what does that sign say? What does that sign say? Like, I really was curious. So he was the brother that like just like would hang out with me and like listen to me. And just, you know, my other brother, he's like much older than me. So I think I was probably a little like annoying. He really loved me and he took care of me. He was like a deep caregiver, but Monty was like my friend. And so I spent a lot of time with him. And so as we got older and I started to see what was happening to him and how he was being responded to, my love for him was really big, and it made me want to keep fighting. And I also felt like my brother suffers from schizoaffective disorder, so he has severe mental illness, and I felt like the odds were against him. And so there's this whole apparatus that's like $3 billion institution that doesn't want to support him and instead is like criminalizing him. Well, the least I can do is be his advocate. And being his advocate meant also being the advocate of many like him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that extension of it is what's so much what you said, driven by love.
Yeah.
Because when you're going above and beyond, you know, your family and the people around you that you grow up with, and even your community where it started out and it keeps extending, you can see that that's really, really driven by love. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, even for me, for many, many years, and, you know, I think it was hard to understand the difference in what you experience. So being a person of color from London, and experiencing racism growing up with my parents, who are, my mother's from Yemen and my father's from India. Mm. And then also experiencing racism myself, you kind of, even in my own ignorance, you kind of just bucket up the racism you experience to feel like that must be the racism that kind of everyone goes through, if that makes sense.
Yep.
You kind of just put this blanket over, and it's, again, this human mind that just wants to like bucket stuff off and be like, oh, they're probably going through the same thing that I'm going through.
Sure.
And then very, you know, more recently having a very intimate conversation with myself and being like, oh no, this is different. It is a different thing that's happening here, right? Like, it's a different experience. There is a different situation. There is far more structural impact here that the community is facing, not what I faced, which is different to that. And I think, you know, so many people have struggled, and you probably asked this question a million times, but I feel I've got my head around it slowly, but I want people to really cement it, and for me too. And I want you to take a moment to just share what Black Lives Matter means to you and what it actually means, as opposed to the challenge that people constantly have with it, with the all lives or the blue lives or the, because I, even though it seems so simple now, when you're kind of on the other side, it feels so simple, but it's so easy to not understand it. So that would be really useful.
Yes. You know, the Black Lives Matter and so many words is a project. It's an experiment to challenge white supremacy. We created Black Lives Matter as a response to a deep pain and trauma that our collective community felt, which was Trayvon Martin was a 17-year-old boy who was killed by a grown white passing man in Sanford, Florida. And many of us believed, because we all knew that George Zimmerman killed him, that there was going to be some form of justice. And he did not, there was no justice. And there still has been no justice for Trayvon Martin. And so when we witnessed that trial, that pretty much year-long trial, where very quickly we understood that Trayvon Martin was on trial for his own murder, and then we sat in and not physically, but we sat and watched, you know, whether it was on TV or on our social media, the jury come back and say not guilty. And that final not guilty, I think, was like a collective slug to everybody's chest, right? To Black people in particular. And that was our Emmett Till moment. It was our moment where we realized, not much has changed when it comes to white supremacy, institutionalized white supremacy. And this child was stolen from us. And the parents have to deal with that forever, and also have to deal with a system that doesn't care that he was stolen from us. So what do we do? And what is the collective response? It wasn't just on Sabrina Fulton to respond. It was on all of us to respond collectively. And so Black Lives Matter, it becomes a collective response to collective trauma. And then it also becomes a reminder of what's possible. So Black Lives Matter becomes a space where we get to decide what's possible for us on our own terms. And that's the power of Black Lives Matter. We created it because we wanted it to be nimble. We wanted it to be able to take the shape it needed to take and whatever moment it needed to take it. And so first it was a hashtag. We took that hashtag into the streets during protests. And then quickly it became an organizing infrastructure. And so it's not just about protesting. How do we build a longevity? And so we're 7 years old, July 13th. And that is because we have stayed the course. Black Lives Matter has turned into a global network with chapters across the globe, here in the US, Canada, and United Kingdom. And so much of our work has been about how do we meet Black people where we're at in the moment, and then how do we build off of the imagination, the collective imagination. And then while we're building this thing for Black people, how do we call in our allies and say, hey, guess what? If you fight for Black lives, you also get more free. So this isn't just about Black people. Yes, we are asking you to put your attention on Black people, but recognize that our liberation is bound into one another. And so when Black people get free, we all get free. And that is, I think, the like sort of like foundation of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, really, really well explained. And I think that's something that hopefully everyone listening can identify with and resonate with and understand where that sits. Tell me about some of the most, because I guess people often may ask the opposite, and I'm interested in this. It's like, what are some of the most hope-giving conversations and moments that you've had in the last 7 years, hopefully in the last 12 months, mm-hmm. hopefully recently? Are there any, and if there aren't, that's, you can be honest too, but what are the most hope-giving conversations that you've had within the Black community and outside of it that has made you feel that people are getting it and that people are going in the right direction?
Yeah, I just went on a social distance retreat for...
That sounds fun. I want to be one.
a company called Trap Heels, creative agency called Trap Heels. And it was powerful. It was this really amazing opportunity to do work, but in a way that is like deeply rejuvenating and restorative. And so there was like a healer on site who was just like holding space in whatever ways you needed it. We like had all the crystals and the sage and like the people who had the amazing vibes, and we just like held space, held a lot of space. And that, I don't get to work like that often actually. So that retreat, that social distance retreat, was so healing and so powerful. And we spent a lot of time talking about healing and the power of meditation and yoga and sound bowls and just like really taking that time to be connected with self, with each other, with the land. It was really powerful. It was exactly what I needed, and I felt like I didn't get to do the work that I said I was going to do, but it was the work that I needed to do.
What I'm fascinated by hearing from you today, Patrice, is like this. There just sounds like there's so much internal work happening at the same time as the external work's happening. And that is something mm-hmm. that I wasn't, not that I didn't think you were doing it, but I'm not so aware of.
Yeah.
And I love hearing that, because I think sometimes people are just like, well, sometimes you just got to go out there and do something.
That's what most people do.
Sorry, say that again.
That's what most people do. They just go out there and do things. In it, and like a machine. That's how we're trained. That's what we're trained to do.
Yeah, but it seems like what is that healing doing to make the activism? Is it making the activism more purposeful, intentional? What is it doing to that part? Because I think people forget that they're connected, and the way you're living sounds very interconnected and synergized. What is that doing for the activism and for the changes that need to happen for you doing these, whether it's meditation or spirituality or any of these experiences for you in healing, as you said?
I don't know. I think only time will tell. Like, I do it not for the activism. I do it for myself and my family. And I have a 4-year-old. And so healing work has always been at the center of my work. It's a big part of how I'm able to survive, is by doing that inner healing work. But it's also about like quality of life. The work that I do is heavy. It's intense. I get a lot of intense sort of like needs and inquiries from people. And so I really was called to healing work in my early 20s because I recognized, oh, I'm on this path and it's not sustainable if I don't have a sense of like grounded healing. So I'm always striving for that. Like I've done all the things, acupuncture, Reiki, like that's just how I've always been. And I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I've had access to be able to, I live in California. So I feel like Californians, especially LA, like we discovered kale before the rest of the country. You know what I mean? So like, in some ways, whenever I go do talks in like the deep South or Midwest, I'm always like, I'm going to start talking about crystals, everybody. But that's just, that has been, it's who I am. Like it just really deeply is who I am. I've always been like this. I have an altar to my ancestors. Like it just is my ground and it gives me a kind of purpose of self because it's very easy to look outward and to think that your purpose is outside of you. And it isn't, it really is inside of you and it directs what you do outside of you. But if we only focus on what's outside of us, like we really do become shells. And there's times in my life where I've only focused on what's outside of me. And it was deeply detrimental to my physical, emotional, mental health.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I don't know if your team shared with me, but I lived as a monk for 3 years.
I know. And I studied. I looked you up.
Yeah. So meditation and spirituality is a huge, huge part of my life. So hearing that in yours is a beautiful thing we share. And I hope we get to create some sacred space together.
I think we're going to be friends.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know if you've ever experienced kirtan, but it's the collective chanting with sacred sounds. And it's really, really special. I have a friend that comes over from London every year and we hold these events in my home with a lot of friends. So yeah, yes, I was. I love it. I love your energy already. But no, for me, it's beautiful to hear it because I think, and I loved what you said that you just do it for yourself. Like, you know, you do it for your children, your child, your family. I think those are such beautiful ways of seeing it. And I guess, I think a lot of people right now, and it's kind of like that, like a lot of us have struggled to make the right decisions for ourselves, but we at least aspire to make the right decisions for future generations.
That's exactly right.
And I think, you know, a lot of people right now are seeing that and they're saying, well, you know, maybe if it was me and my, you know, I would have let it go, but my kids are growing up in this world and this is not working. What are some of the things that, before we final on the ally piece, before we get into that, what are some of the things that people can genuinely do to not just be activated around moments that we've seen in the world, whether obviously it's Breonna Taylor, it's George Floyd, like these horrific murders and you know, tragedies. How is it so that you're not activated around them, but that it continues? What is needed? Because I think that's a message that I keep hearing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's how is this sustained in a real way that brings about real change so that everyone's children can grow up in a world without any racial injustice?
I mean, I think, you know, what I try to tell people is find an organization and commit to it. And I say that because the only way that we fight institutional racism is if we're fighting institutions that are fighting institutional racism. Mm-hmm. You can't do it alone. As I got older, I realized I had so much inside of me. I needed organization. I needed to have a container to figure out, okay, I want to take on everything. I can't. What do I feel most moved by? What bothers me the most? What keeps me up at night? All right, let me do that work. And that was really critical for me as a young person. And I started organizing at 16 years old. You know, I did my first petition against my school administration. And then I realized, ooh, I liked that feeling. I like having agency. I like being able to be like, you did something wrong to me. And I'm not just going to yell in your face. I'm going to actually organize lots of people around this to make sure it changes. So this doesn't happen to me again. It doesn't happen to other people. And that's what so many collectives, organizations are doing. I also tell people, if you feel moved by something and it doesn't exist, create it, start it. That's important too. Like lots of organizations exist, started because it didn't exist. That infrastructure didn't exist. So that's super important.
Yeah, I think that's a great reminder. And yeah, I often say to people, like, you may not find your purpose through your passion, but you find it through your pain.
Yes.
And for a lot of people, that's where it stems from, is that they find something really painful that they went through or that they see people going through, and they want to go and serve that and make a difference. But I love how you keep bringing it back to just, you know, having to take personal responsibility for what we see, which is such a strong message. I know we only have 5 minutes left. I have like a million more questions I can ask you, so we may have to do a part two at some point. But what I want to do is we end every episode of On Purpose with two segments. One's called Fill in the Blanks, and you're an artist, so I think you'll like this. And then the final five. So the Fill in the Blanks is I read out sentences and you fill in the blank at the end.
Okay, great.
It's kind of like your journal. So we get a little dive into what your journal may look like. Okay, so fill in the blanks. This is the first one. Freedom for all is.
Freedom for all is liberation.
Okay. True equality starts with
fighting for Black lives.
Being brave means
showing up for yourself first.
Absolute kindness is not.
Absolute kindness is not. That's such a strange sentence.
Yeah, it's a hard one. Yeah, you can change it. You can edit the sentence if you don't like it.
No, I'm going to try this. Well, the first thing that came to my head was passive aggressive.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's good. I like it. I wish everyone would.
Smile.
Ah, I love that.
On each other.
I love that. Okay, these are your final five. So these are, with you, I may go over. We've got a few minutes so we can go into it. Usually they're one word or one sentence answers, but okay. What do you believe most people misunderstand about activism?
That it's only protest.
Okay, let's expand. Tell me more. What else is it?
People think that activism is like when you go show up to a protest or there is a protest and that's it. Like that it's like, and that's like 0 to 100. There's all this in between, from like saying that you want to become an activist and really an organizer, and then the protest. The protest is actually the last thing you do. Protest usually happens when you've tried everything else, when you've tried to talk to your elected official, when you sent them a letter, when you organized everybody to show up to the board meeting, when you've, made your public comment, where you pressured them through other people. The protest is basically when every elected official or appointed official has ignored your demands. Protest is the final step to be like, all right, I've tried everything, now I'm showing up. So activism isn't just protest.
Wow, that is such a profound answer. Thank you so much for expanding on that. All right, number two. See, I knew I was going to go off tangent with you. I couldn't do it. Question number two for you. What question do you ask yourself the most? Or what's a question you reflect on yourself the most?
I usually wake up thinking, what am I doing today so I can change the material conditions for Black people?
Wow, beautiful question. Thank you. So led by purpose, that question. That's amazing. Okay, that was two. Question number three. If you could create a law that everyone in the world had to follow, what would it be?
If I could create a law, I think it would be that there would be a community block party once a month. So everybody would come out on their block. They would bring food. Like, it would be like mandated. No one would get in trouble if they didn't do it though. So it would be a loose law. I don't believe in criminalizing. So the law would be, you know, really to create a culture around like everybody having like a block party once a month. And like everybody's like home on the block would be open. If you live in an apartment, all the doors would be open and people would just like love and have food and hang out and talk philosophy and art and how we're going to change the world together.
Wow, I want to live on that block. That's great. Okay, cool. They never had that answer before. It's a brilliant answer, by the way. No one has ever said anything close to that. Question number four and five. So question number four, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned in the last 12 months?
That you can plan as much as you want, but there is always a bigger plan.
Beautiful. Okay. And fifth and final question. I think this is incredible, but can you please share the importance of the date February 2nd, 2020?
Is that when COVID happened?
No. It's the LA City Council declared it as
It's Patrice Cullors Day.
Yeah.
I forgot that quickly.
I love that. That's the best.
I'm like, wait, what happened? COVID?
You took it like a trivia question. You thought it was like, you know, like a historical trivia question. It wasn't. It was about you.
I love that you all know that.
There's no trick questions in my interviews. Everything's from
Patrice's Day.
Yeah. Tell us about the significance of that. I mean, like, what does that
mean? I had no idea that was going to happen. I like showed up to an event that my local chapter put on for me, and a council member, Herb Wesson, and the city council declared that February 2nd, 2020 is Patrice Cullors Day.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Patrice. Thank you so much. Everyone who's been listening or watching, I hope today you got a deep dive into Patrice Cullors, the person, the human, the energy, the presence, because I did. I definitely feel I got to know you so much better today. And I appreciate you being so open and vulnerable and letting us go in this completely different direction. And
love it.
You know, I'm really, yeah, really appreciate that, Patrice. Thank you for going on this journey with us. And yeah, I think we're going to be friends. So I'm excited to, once we can all see each other again, I want to come to one of your block parties and I'm going to invite you to the kirtans at our place for some spiritual healing. But yeah, thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for being a messenger and an artist and an activist too. And just sharing so many elevated insights around activism with us. I think that's what you've done. You've really, for a lot of us, at least me especially, rewired my thought processes on what true activism is. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually in person and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by anxiety, struggling to find restful sleep, or plagued by a restless inability to focus? It's time to break free from the chains of mental health challenges and discover a path to healthy living. Welcome to Amen University, founded by renowned psychiatrist and brain health expert, Dr. Daniel Amen. Dr. Amen, alongside a team of esteemed doctors and experts in their fields, understands the struggles you're facing and are here to offer solutions. From debilitating anxiety to sleepless nights filled with worry, our courses are meticulously crafted to target these specific challenges head on. Join us on a journey of transformation led by Dr. Amen and a roster of top-tier professionals. Say goodbye to the constant battle with your mind and embrace a future filled with hope and possibility. Visit our website today to explore our courses and start your journey towards a brighter tomorrow. Use code BRAIN10 and get 10% off. That's code BRAIN10 and get 10% off your first purchase. Amen University, because your mental health matters.